B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right. I want to get right to him because he's a man with great answers, great perspective, does a wonderful job covering the Eagles and football for the Inquirer, theinquirer.com. I love talking to him each week. Jeff McClain joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, Anthony.
Wow, dude. I that's one I didn't expect. And I definitely didn't expect it to play out like that.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, especially after the way the defense had been playing up until that point and versus the offense, and we had the direct opposite of what we maybe were expecting. The offense was back kind of clicking, I wouldn't say on all cylinders, but certainly putting up 31 points should be enough to win a game, especially against the Dolphins, one of the worst offenses in the NFL. And in turn, the defense was dreadful.
Let me ask, because there is a common denominator when the defense gets riddled and when the defense plays well. It gets riddled. Now, again, we know about the D-backs and stuff, but they get riddled Minnesota, they get riddled Dallas, they get riddled Miami. They play well in inclement weather in Buffalo, in inclement weather at home against New England, inclement weather against Seattle at home. You see anything there?
Yeah, fair to point out. I mean, it was clear, 82. I'd asked Malcolm Jenkins after the games, the climate change had anything to do with the result, and he I don't give a bleep about climate. No, it had nothing to do with it. And right, you shouldn't use that as an excuse. I mean, you can play in any
No, I'm just saying, anyway, in good conditions is when this defense is not at its best, and that's what we've seen so far.
You can throw the ball.
Exactly.
You're trying to throw the ball, right? And if you're either trying to throw the ball and throwing it accurately against these defensive backs, advantage to the offense.
Right, on a slow track in windy conditions, McLeod can get over, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, certainly that's fair to mention. I do have to give the defense credit though during that month. I mean, Russell Wilson, that wasn't ideal conditions, but they play in that type of weather in Seattle all the time, and they came in and they kept him pretty much in check. I mean,
no, listen, I agree with you. You're right about that. I even brought it up. I know DK Metcalf dropped a couple big ones, but I agree with you. I think they played all in all. That's a great offense. You saw it again last night on display. It's a great offense, and they played well against it.
No, they had turned it around. And if you had any reason to think that whether the Eagles were going to make the playoffs, it was because the defensive performance had improved, and Jim Schwartz seemed to find a formula with better defensive backs, specifically the cornerbacks. But over a longer period of time, and that's what we're seeing now. We see they've now played 12 games. We're starting to get a better indication of what this team is and what this defense is. And we've seen this enough from Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills over their careers. They're probably both two second or third cornerbacks, and they're not, they don't have a number one guy, and you don't have a number one guy, it's going to kill you. And if the other guys around you aren't playing as well, I didn't think McLeod had a good game. I didn't think Nate Gary had a good game.
No.
And you're not getting enough of a pass rush. Geez, look out, Ryan Fitzpatrick was on fire, and Devontae Parker is a good receiver. And given the matchup, this is a big receiver versus guys that just aren't particularly long. It could get ugly. And that's what we saw.
Well, there's a lot to talk about, and I we're talking to Jeff McClain from the Inquirer, Inquirer.com. So I still don't understand why Peterson doesn't call a timeout when they line up in that formation. That's egregious. When you see a formation that different, the first thing you do as a coach is call timeout.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It didn't scream timeout at the time. I think I was actually looking down my pad of paper, writing something. I didn't even realize what was going on until like the last second. But Doug's watching the whole thing.
The minute I saw it, I'm yelling, timeout, timeout, Doug, timeout.
Yeah, we're in the first half. It's not like you really need those timeouts, right?
And you had them.
And what could you lose? What could you lose there by calling that timeout? And who knows what would have happened otherwise, but And they weren't prepared for it. Doug said they had prepared for trick plays because they know that special teams coordinator does have them in his his bag of tricks. But they weren't prepared for that one, clearly, because they had Josh Sweat lined up against the kicker, and he took the bait. And, it was a well-executed play. You got to tip your cat to the Dolphins. That probably would have been a tough play under a lot of circumstances. But do they run it again if he called timeout? Probably not.
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. I got to tell you, the litany of excuses.
He didn't do a good job yesterday.
The litany of excuses and all the nonsense that he just spewed yesterday is unacceptable. And then he always falls back on the obnoxiousness of, you play competitive sports. Yo, I'm sorry, I missed you, that you were Dan Marino when you played.
Yeah, I don't know why he even says that. I mean,
it's obnoxious.
I think most of us in there have played competitive sports.
Exactly.
Obviously not at a professional level. But, what I always say is, do you have to be president to be a journalist and cover the president? No, that's not what we do. I don't have to have played at the NFL.
And the head coach should understand that.
I know how to report. I'll report the game, and I know how to, write and talk about football. And again, I don't think I'm an expert, but I talk to experts, although Doug doesn't certainly come off as one the last year.
No, he doesn't, and it begs, there's so many issues and, establishing and sticking with a running game has been a hallmark of issues for him.
Yeah, I kind of go the opposite direction here than a lot of people. I do feel like there have been times when the run game has gotten away from Doug, but they were scheming guys open through the air. They scored 31 points. And a lot of that had to do with the passing offense. I never really thought for the game that there was a big problem with that. Again, they got ahead 28-14, but they never had a two-score lead when they had the ball. If they had a two-score lead when they had the ball and he didn't run the ball, then I would have called him out. But the one three and out that they had in the second half, if you recall, they ran on first down, which is what people wanted to do. So,
yeah, I'm not a pass guy. I'm a pass guy when there's credible receivers. I grant you that they scored enough points to win the game. However, everybody talked about, the climate, defense wilting. When you run the ball against an inferior team, where you have a huge advantage up front, you take their will.
That's fair. That's fair.
I'm sorry,
that had been the formula, and Doug had, they had said that as far back as Green Bay won that game, that, and certainly Doug alluded to it several times that, with the way the defense was playing, he had to run the ball more. Maybe he should have realized at some point there was no way this defense was going to stop the offense. When you go five straight touchdowns, five straight touchdowns on each possession, minus a kneel down before the end of the half, your defense can't stop this offense. So that's a fair criticism to point out. I just didn't feel like it was egregious. And there have been times before when I felt like it has been. But they were scheming guys open. Alshon had a very good game. He was getting open down the field. I'm not going to kill Doug on this.
I bring it up only because there has been, with this team, normally I like the pass, but the way this team is built without adequate receivers, I'm going off of something that has been weeks in the making. And then when I see a team like Miami, you want to try to get them to quit early. Like you gotta get them to quit. You gotta pound them. That's how they quit. The more you breathe life into them, they're going to hang around. And then you see what happens.
Yeah. Just my one last point too. If Zach Ertz catches that ball,
I know.
A great pass. We're talking about a different result here. And again, I just felt like the receivers are getting open, and That was a terrible secondary.
It's an awful secondary. But they have an awful defense. They have an awful defensive front. But whatever.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
The idea of, I got to ask you this because it's nagging at me. Was 2017 just, you know, blue snow? Was it just a thing of good fortune? It was just one of those years?
Well, they went 9-7 last year, and, you know, also catching that pass, we're probably talking about them at least reaching the NFC Championship. So I don't want to say that was just an anomaly. And even if it was an anomaly, I mean, you know, take it for what it was. It was a great season. You know, Doug did a phenomenal job, and he outcoached Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl with his backup quarterback. So you can never take that away from him.
I'm not trying to take it away from him. I really don't. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Jeff. I just got to get it out. I don't want to take it away from him, but to adequately look forward, look ahead, I need to know who I really have. Is he a good, above-average technician, X and O man? Like, I know he's a good leader, and I'm not saying he's a bad coach, but yeah. Is he a guy? Because I see, like, basic errors sometimes that were thinking on your feet, and, you know, I guess the question begs, can you do better? And I'm not saying it's going to happen now, but you need to ask the question.
These are areas of concern in 2016. And, you know, he kind of reversed that narrative and those questions in 2017. I thought there were a few times last year, 2018, when all of a sudden the aggressive Doug we saw in 2017 wasn't there. He finally kind of got his mojo back late in the season when Nick became the quarterback. Look, you see this around the NFL every year. There's teams that go to the Super Bowl, and then a year later, they don't make the playoffs. Or, you know, look what's happened to Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was on the way to beating Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl as well, and he probably
then he lost Kyle Shanahan.
Not too long. Well, that, you know, that was certainly, and the Eagles lost Frank Reich. But I think what they're, you know, I think that's fair to point out about Doug. But I think also you have to look at the front office, and you have to look at Howie Roseman.
Well, that was my next question.
And, well, I mean, like again, he had the. You know, he hit solid gold in 2017 off season, but he tried to repeat the same formula both off seasons and just to kind of ride that wave. And that ended up being the wrong decision to make. A lot of these signings that they've made haven't panned out. And you probably needed a general manager to be able to kind of look at players outside the ones that he knows already and say, hey, I feel like this guy can come in here and make an impact. It's remarkable to me how many guys that they signed this past offseason just because they already knew them and they brought them back. And in many cases, they've either gotten hurt or they haven't played up to expectations. And you need an evaluator that can look beyond just what you know right in front of you. You need an evaluator that can also do a little bit better in the drafts as well.
Yeah, you know it's funny because you know Belichick always talked about when you win, you got to pair the roster. It's important that you trim that roster so you don't get kind of fat and full yourself. And, you know, and when I hear comments like, well, we took him for granted, we weren't prepared, you know, we felt we were the better team, we took him lightly. Well, that's all predicated on people that think that maybe Orlando Scandrick was right, that they still smell themselves.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, as I mentioned, you bring back the same guys, and in some cases that works. You have your guys. You want to go with that in certain circumstances, but you got to know when also to cut the cord as well. And I do feel like, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a bit of hubris in that NovaCare complex bunker about, you know, we do things a certain way, and this is how we're going to do it, and you know, and in reality, you probably need to kind of maybe bring somebody from the outside in, not only in the personnel department, but also in the coaching staff.
Look, this is not hindsight, right? I'm not giving you the hindsight.
No, we talked about this.
You and I have gone back. We've talked for 10 years. And, I, you know, when it happened, The minute Nick Foles goes is the time where you got to cut bait with guys, right? Because Foles still casts that large specter in the locker room. That's when you pair the roster from the Foles people and transition it and redo it with Wentz.
Yeah. I don't know what kind of division there is in terms of Foles guys. But
you get my point. Like, that goes back to
the... Yeah, maybe a few.
Yes.
There's one prominent guy.
Well, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do with Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when Alshon is healthy, he's a good receiver. We saw that on Sunday. He had a good game. And he's the only guy on the roster who can do that at that position. But again, you have a huge cap hit next year if you keep him. I mean, if you release him, obviously you have it if you keep him. And then you have the Deshaun question as well. There's a little bit of a hit there if you try and bring him back. You don't have that deep threat, and you don't know where you're going to get it. But can you trust that guy to be healthy again for even, you know, let's say 12 or 13 games?
Yeah,
those are big questions for this front office this offseason. The Alshon, it's more than just production on the field, though. He hasn't talked to us in about a month now. I don't know what his issues are. We'll see if he talks to other reporters nationally if things start going sour.
Yeah, you like him better than I do it right now. I mean, you know, he can't run. I think he's a mediocre receiver. He had a good game against pathetic defensive backs.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I think he's an average guy right now who can't run. So they need to redo this offense. Been screaming about that for over a year now.
Dramatically, yeah. You gotta bring somebody else in. I think that's almost whatever happens these last four games, something's gonna happen in terms of that.
Yeah.
Doug's gonna have to be forced to bring someone else in besides Mike Rowe. Whatever they do with Mike Rowe.
What do you do with Jim? Is Jim back?
They like Jim. Again, who are you gonna replace them with? Do you trust?
Well, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, there are a lot of great coaches out there. I'm not saying he deserves to be fired right now, but, you know, because I agree with you, the defense did play well the last few weeks and had turned it around. But, you know, I mean, you gotta be. I think you need going into this off season. You got to be pretty dramatic, I think, in your changes.
Yeah. The Jim question's a fair one. He recently signed an extension. They pay him a fair amount. Are they going to be willing to take that hit as well? But Jim has a lot of power in that building for defensive coordinator. I wrote a story last month about that. I don't think there's a coordinator in the NFL that has as much sway as Jim does because they give him autonomy over that unit, but also they give him a lot of say in personnel. Howie, you know, I wrote about this. Chris Long, they were going to bring him back after Malik Jackson got hurt. And, you know, Chris started working out for a couple weeks. He was ready to sign, and it seemed like it was all but imminent. And then Howie told him to call Jim, and by the end of the conversation, Chris is convinced that he didn't want to come back and play for Jim because Jim didn't basically want him back. So they give Jim a lot of power.
Hmm.
I wonder if that plays into their thinking. Maybe it also plays into their thinking if they want to cut him loose. Like, hey, we want to kind of bring, you know, do things a little differently in terms of personnel when it comes to the defensive side. Because Jim falls in love with guys, and he wants his guys, and they're willing to give him his guys. But maybe sometimes his guys aren't getting the job done. And certainly Jalen Mills is one of his guys, and I think Jalen is what he is, which is fine. But, man, against good receivers and guys that can get over you on top, it can kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It certainly can. Hey, the last thing, and I go back because it's a big discussion, but just quickly, I guess I'm surprised looking back on the last drafts and personnel issues. So besides Howie, you also had Joe Douglas who had a big part in that.
Yeah.
I thought Joe was a sharp, sharp guy, and I don't know, his tenure doesn't look too good either.
No, I mean, that's fair. Joe was brought in to be the draft guy more than anything. You know, he learned a lot in terms of the free agency and signing contracts and et cetera. And obviously that's why the Jets brought him as GM. And I think, you know, I think Howie listened to Joe more in regards to players and free agency and stuff like that when he first came in. And that was the 2017 offseason. You know, Chris Long was a Joe Douglas guy.
Right.
Patrick Robinson was a Joe Douglas guy. And Tim Jernigan was a Joe Douglas
Jernigan,
guy.
Jernigan,
there we go. Joe, hey, we brought you in. We're gonna listen to you a little bit here. And that's what happened. But there were a bunch of guys that I knew that Joe did not want here.
Okay.
Michael Bennett, Deshaun Jackson, guys that I don't believe that he was on board with, because just knowing Joe's old school, and he doesn't want certain locker room
right.
characters in terms of culture in the locker room, and you also mentioned in terms of injury too. But the drafts are fair to to critique Joe on, because I think that was more of his baby. And you know, you look at the first one, whereas I think Derek Barnett's a fine guy, a fine defensive end, and he might have had his best game this past weekend, and he's been dealing with injuries. He's got to play better to live up to that 14 pick. And then you look at Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas. Sidney wasn't even active on Sunday.
No.
Rasul Douglas couldn't even get on the field in terms of defense. These are second and third rounders.
Yeah.
The following year, I think Goddard, and considering what, again, Joe's being handed five draft picks. That's Howie, you know what I'm saying? So
that's a great point. Listen, what a discussion.
You know, like, I mean, give the guy some picks, you know?
Yeah. No, listen, Jeff, thank you, brother. This was such an awesome discussion.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.